But I know this. He did not call Johnny Mac John McLaughlin, buddy. I don't know what his name form was, but often he was like Al McGuire. He'd have a different name. I don't know. But I know this was no buddy, and he knows of Bob Uecker in his prime. Johnny Mac, good evening.
Hey, Homer, I got to tell you, he called me Mr. McLaughlin.
See?
No, no. And by the way, when you told that story about, hey, buddy, he did that all the time, and I had forgotten that. That's so good. People think he knew their names, and he didn't. Hey, buddy. what a guy.
No, he is, I think, the greatest Milwaukeean in Milwaukee history. From Milwaukee, I don't know who could be more famous than as a representative of Milwaukee than Bob Uecker. Not only for what, but how many years?
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. All the way. I mean, he was born here.
Yep.
He died here, and in between, he was well-known probably more than anyone and ever out of the state. And to be with the Brewers all those years, and I've been thinking about that today, and I had a discussion with Laurel Preeb, his son, son-in-law of Bud Selig, and Laurel and I stay connected, and I was saying, man, Laurel, he did 54 years of 162 games a year. Now, I know that he took some off the last few years on road trips and didn't have to go, but with the Bucks, I did 43 years, and we did 82 games a year, but a lot our first 10 years, we didn't do all the away games on TV. And so for you to do that, that's a testimony of love, of endurance, of toughness, because you got to travel and you got to do all those games, and baseball games last a lot longer than basketball games.
So yes, the announcers inform me of that often. They should pay you half of what they do because you're only there for half the time. And you alluded to it. If ever there was a person who could have chosen to leave Milwaukee a million times to a million places, he never did. Never.
Never did. Could afford to. Would stay here. Even with their home, with their condo, I think, in Arizona, he would go out there in the winter. But he was back here all the time because he did a lot of Mac Fund events for us over the years, both in summer and when he would be back.
Right, and when he was doing Mac Fund events, let's go back. This is when he owned the world.
100%.
I'm sure you never paid him a penny all the years he did stuff for you.
Oh, no. That never came up. And the one that I always remember the most that he would come to, we had the Gimbel's Mac Fund Run. It started in front of Gimbel's on Wisconsin Avenue, went down to the lakefront, up north, back, and I would ask him to come down and kick us off and be part of the leading the ceremonies to kick it off. So he had to be down there at 6:30 in the morning. And here he would come, and he would do it, and then on his way out afterwards, for the first few years I would run in it, so I didn't get to see him right away, but afterwards he would always say, hey, Johnny boy, hey, Matt, call me anytime. I'll do whatever you want. And he came to a number of events, our golf outings, and was always, the star of the event.
No, he was the star of the stars.
Exactly. Who didn't want to see Uecker and hear from him? And
I'm sure you people begged to be in his group if you could play with him. There's nobody you would want to play with more than Bob Uecker for just the entertainment value and everything, right?
Well, and in the early years of the Mac Fund, we our first event ever was a golf outing. And we had it in May at Triple I, and we had it on an off day for the Brewers, okay? Every Brewer player, every Brewer coach, and Uke would come out and play in that golf outing for the Mac Fund for, I don't know, a number of years. And a lot of those May dates were pretty icy, pretty chilly, and they would be out there, and you could always be a part of it, and everybody wanted to play with him. But at the same time, you had Robin and Molitor and Gantner and Gorman and all those guys also that would come out. What a great day and evening that would be with all these great stars for the Brewers. It was great fun, and they helped us make it a success. It's sold out every year.
Talking with Johnny Mac, John McLaughlin, because we're talking old people about memories of Bob Uecker. In his prime, when how much did you stay in touch? How much did you run into him? You alluded to it, John, and that is the energy he always had. I don't want to say he was yelling, but he was always firm and loud.
Well, here's what would happen. Okay, so I would call him, okay, on his cell. And a number of times I would get him on his way to the ballpark, just coincidentally. I never really knew the Brewers' schedule. I just knew they played every day. And this was when he was still traveling and all. But a couple times I'd get him in the car. And this is how it would go, because he was in the car, and he didn't always know who he was picking up, but he knew if they had his number. So I'd call, and it'd be like this. Hello. You know, kind of like, And I'd say, Uke. Johnny Mac, hey! And then he would just light up, and then he would start. And we would talk all the way to the ballpark. And this is the truth. Within 15 to 30 seconds, I'm laughing so hard I'm bent over. I mean, on the phone. Because he had me, he would say something, usually about himself, as you know, how he would pick on himself. But within 15 to 30 seconds, I'm laughing. And we would just talk back and forth all the way to the ballpark, and then he'd get there, and we'd get off and go our separate ways. And so, and then over the years, I would see him at the ballpark, because when Sal Bando, as you know, one of my four best friends ever in the world, when he was assistant GM and then GM after Bando McLaughlin days together in our business, often I was down there with Sal at the ballpark, and very often the guys would ask me to do the chapel on Sundays with Robin and Paul and those guys, and we'd always have the chapel in the shower area, which in the old stadium was pretty raw. And I would see Uecker in those days also and get to talk to him and have fellowship, and then we were at some weddings together of Brewer players at the time. But there was a unity at that time and in the 80s with that whole group, and they all would participate in the Mac Fund events. And Uke was always – never turned me down, would always come, would always do it. And, crap, if you had to pay him, you probably couldn't have afforded him. I mean, he's a national figure, you know, but he would always come.
And then I would say it's amazing to me that back then, and certainly later on when he was older, but he was a player. The players viewed him as a player, like he would throw bat. I mean, it wasn't like he was an announcer, and I think he always loved being a player and always thought of himself as a player and proudest most, I think, that he was a major league player above all the other amazing things he did.
Well, Homer, think about this one, and I can't go back and do it, and I know a lot of the great announcers of the past, because baseball has a longer history in our country as a national sport than football and basketball. And so if you recall, the great well-known announcers came from baseball and radio, right? And, you know, Harry Carey and on and on and on. But yet, to my knowledge, and I could be wrong on this, but I don't think any of them had been a player, but Uecker had and became the announcer. All of them were professional announcers from the get-go.
Right. Or you might have had an analyst who was a player, but as far as play-by-play, I think you're right.
And you know, you helped me here. I think in the early days, in the 50s and the early 60s, I'm not sure a lot of those radio guys even had a color analyst. They did it.
They did every inning.
They did it all.
Yep.
Remember?
Yep.
And so Uke has become this famous, great announcer, and yet he had been a player too. And then, you know, the players all along the line, even to the end, even to this last year, they all loved him, respected who he was, from the Brewers, gave him that space and that crown as a special person.
Talking with John McLaughlin, Johnny Mac, and one of the reasons, as I said, I'm old, you're old, but I don't know how it is to explain to people as much as they know him now as the voice of the brew of the Brewers or however, mm-hmm. how he was a national star. He was so big, it's hard to explain anybody in Milwaukee being as big a national celebrity as he was on Johnny Carson people, and part of the national TV baseball team.
The commercial ads,
yes,
you know, best seat in the house, but it's the last one. And when they used all the athletes for those ads, all of those things, you know, the young people today missed all that. And, man, that was great entertainment for us. Didn't you enjoy all that?
Well, I give him credit for everything. I believe he was a comedic genius. I believe those Miller Lite commercials were great because he was a part of the writing of that. All the movies he did, they were great because they let him do stuff. The only thing I thought he ever did that wasn't at his standard was Mr. Belvedere. And I watched one show and I told a friend, there's no way Euchre's involved with that. They go, what do you mean? It's not up to Euchre's standard. Ask somebody. And he came back and go, how'd you know? How'd you know what? They didn't let him do anything. They said that's why it wasn't as good as everything else he ever touched.
And he carried that, Belvedere.
Yes. And it was, even not being as good as he could have been, he still carried it.
Yeah,
yes.
and he was not a professional actor. Come on. And it's all of those things, you know. And even now, when every day I'll get online and I'll watch, I'll look at some things, I read news and do this and do that, I'll get pop-ups of him on Johnny Carson. Every time it pops up on me, I got to stop and watch it. And Johnny Carson loved it.
No, I can tell you, the story there was, if you were a comedian on Johnny Carson and he asked you to come over, there were always notes of what he was to ask you to set you up. Bob Euchre never had a note, ever. And so when he would come on, Johnny Carson would just be amazed and would laugh so much because he couldn't believe anybody could be that good because no other comedian ever could do it without any script at any time and be funny every time. That's how he amazed Johnny Carson.
His humor on there, that long face of Bob Euchre with his self-depicting humor, made it all work. And you're right. Johnny Carson was a difficult man from what I read. Loved Euchre, loved what he did, and as we all did. I mean, you can't give him enough kudos. We just can't.
Yeah, you can't tell people how big he was. And they say they'll never be another one like him. And oftentimes there is, but there won't be another Euchre.
Well, no. And also the fact that he did play and he announced. And you know what? He didn't have writers. He did that.
Ever.
He came up with his shtick. He came up with it. And on Carson or wherever it was, he didn't have writers behind him. He did it. And that was what's so special. And every time I talked to him or was with him, it was just fun. It was just fun. And, you know, that was difficult for him.
And he was 90. 90.
Going to be almost 91 by just a couple of weeks.
And still had great energy, still had the rhythm of the game and the ability to do it. It's sad, but that's a pretty good run. Pretty good run.
Oh, it's a great run. And, you know, I think of Bud Selig through all this because he was close to him and they were tight as friends. And do you know that actually Bud is like 3 months younger than Euchre?
Yep.
And he's still active and going, also teaching and doing all of these great things. So what an era, huh? Wow.
Yep. Well, appreciate you coming on. And the old man's hour, honoring Bob Euchre. Thanks, Johnny Mac.
Hey, Homer, anytime, brother. Call me.
John McLaughlin. No, I think the doctor of pitching, Jerry Augustine, might be next.